When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, all you lumberjacks and lumberjanes, welcome back to your favorite podcast, That Would Be Rad, a podcast that majors in 80s and 90s nostalgia, comic culture, all things paranormal, and minors in retro video games, tabletop RPGs, pre-internet mysteries, and raising our kids to be half as cool as we were back in the 80s. I'm your host, Tyler Bentz, and this is your other host,
Woody Brown.
Hey, man, did you see how I said minors in?
Yeah. I caught that. I also... caught that you, four seasons in, and you can time your breaths.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
I was actually thinking, as I was doing it, I was like, man, I'm impressing myself right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You should. You should be.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of magic, man. Oh, I'm not doing it there. Man, we try our best to kind of get organized before a season begins and to, in our planning sessions and stuff, What are some of the things, so this is the mission, when we're setting out to do that, hey, what are some of the things that we want to finally get to this year that we didn't get to last year? What are some of the things that, yes, that topic is intimidating because of the vast amount of information, but what are we going to, you know, this is the year that we're going to do it.
Right.
I'm going to go ahead and predict some of those bigger ones we're going to be like, well, let's just...
just call it.
Let's just do it next year. Yeah, let's just call it. Yep. But this, today's episode, is something that you had brought up to me a long time ago, you know, when we're just kind of like, hey, have you ever heard of this? Have you ever heard of that? Have you ever heard of this? And I'm so glad you did because I had completely forgotten about this book.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so excited to dive into it. Like Tyler and I think every week say, but certainly quite often say, we're obsessed with like folklore.
Mm.
You know, we found that even as much of the folklore that we know about our local areas and even our home country here in the USA, there's so much of it that we don't actually know or that we haven't at least covered on the show. And today, I think that's part of the reason why I'm so excited, because this is a book that I think the original copyright was like 1910.
Yeah, right. Yep.
This is an era of America that, I don't know, it's very interesting to me. There's something about it that just, you know, these folks were, you know, there was no such thing as Silicon Valley.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you had a job, you were working your butt off from before sun up and way after sundown. And the guys that wrote this book were part of that crew. And I think that's part of the, I guess, allure to this topic and today's show that I'm so excited to share with you guys, our listeners.
Yeah, the one thing about this book before we get started that I think is really cool is it sort of goes hand in hand with, you know, as kids of like the 80s and 90s, I think it was something that like we sort of grew up with, like, you know, I remember so fondly like stories of like Paul Bunyan, Johnny Appleseed, Babe the Blue Ox, like these like tall tales, if you will. And they were always like, I don't know, sort of like displayed in as like, is it real? Is it not? But then also this sort of like tongue in cheek, kind of like funny. Like, you know, that's the whole point of like the tall tale is like some of the stuff is just so like, you know, wild and like over the top. There's like sort of like a fun element to it. And I think this book is like, it just goes right along with that, you know, that theme.
For sure. And I think what's cool too is the guy that wrote it, his name's William Thomas Cox. Mm-hmm. He lived from 1878 to 1961, which if you just think about that lifetime in terms of all the different things he witnessed, fascinating in and of itself. Mm-hmm. But he was actually Minnesota's first state forester. Yeah. And he was a commissioner of conservation. So sometimes I think when I think of, or it's easy, I should say, to think about, well, you know, this guy wrote this book. You just think of somebody that's just like writing all this, you know, crazy stuff. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's just neat to see that this is a guy who kind of walked the walk, so to speak. He was a conservationist. He was a forester. He was out in these areas. And I couldn't find this necessarily in the research about this, but it just kind of feel like I get this this sort of picture comes to mind of him sort of just being out there in the wilderness, meeting all these lumberjacks and other people just working out there, and these stories just kind of being told and shared with one another, and some of them perhaps even given to them by Native Americans that they met, mm-hmm. and like all these legends and everything kind of coming together, and him just being like, you know, some of these stories are so good, I would love for other people to hear them.
Yeah.
And so I just love that that idea.
Yeah, and also, like, I do think it's cool that, you know, I think it's almost more maybe in the modern age where, you know, if you talk about conspiracies or cryptids or any of those, like, sort of, you know, like, quote-unquote, like, crazy things, that always sort of delegitimizes the writer or the person who's, you know, talking about it. Whereas, like, I think it's cool that you have this kind of stuff where it's this dude that's sort of like continuing on these kind of tall tales and these, like, you know, early American sort of romanticized, like, pioneer era mm-hmm. sort of tales. But it's cool because, like, even the artist, you know, he was what was he?
I mean, he was like a soldier in World War One.
But he was also like a...
He was also a forester.
Yeah, forester, that's
and
right.
And U.S. consul.
Yeah, exactly.
And the other guy, the guy that did like the Latin classifications of the animals,
right, yeah.
was the dendrologist of the Forestry Service.
Yeah.
So these are like people that are in the industry putting out this. And I think it's important for us to note too, the way it's sort of presented is sort of in that old school sort of field guide.
Exactly.
Format, you know, where it's like you'll have this description mm-hmm. of a quote unquote fearsome critter, which, by the way, I just love it when people call them critters.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's awesome.
And then there's like a full page sort of landscape illustration by this Dubois, that's what mm-hmm. I said.
Okay.
And then this, you know, Latin classification, you know, noting their habitat, their physical makeup, behavior, and that kind of stuff.
And I think we call that in the biz binomial nomenclature.
Impressive. Yeah. History awards title.
You know, again, like, it is like a tongue-in-cheek thing, but I think, like, it, you know, it adds, like, a little bit of sort of, I don't know, like an air of, like, I don't know, how would you say it? Like, having, like, the Latin nomenclature, like it.
Yeah, it just makes it almost like legitimate it a little bit more.
Yeah.
It's very cool.
Yeah, dude. Well, let's get into it, man. I think.
Well, here's an interesting fact about the book before we just kind of dive in. I just thought this is interesting, very small, but it was, again, first published in 1910, mm-hmm. but then wasn't reprinted again until half a century later, which is just neat, you know? And it was actually included as a bonus in Walker D. Wyman's Mythical Creatures of the North Country that came out in 1969.
Well, it originally came out in 1910, but then it came out under the title Just Fearsome Critters in 1939, mm-hmm. and then The Hodag and Other Tales of the Logging Camps in 1928, Paul Bunyan and Natural History, 1935. So I think, like, a lot of these, it was sort of repackaged.
Maybe,
like,
just reprinted, yeah,
numerous times.
As Fearsome Creatures.
Yeah. But 1978, Mythical Creatures of the USA and Canada is, I think, the one that you're talking about.
But we're going back to the original 1910
mm-hmm.
because it's public domain now, and you can get these books for free online anyway. And when we did, you know, this is the kind of stuff that I just love because I'm taking myself back in time to the early 1900s. And I feel like, you know, this is a note by this author to us. And it's just that whole thing of like anything that you write down, anything that you create, that is truly your legacy. I mean, you that's what you leave behind, because for generation upon generation after you are gone, people are reading your words.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Right. Okay. So it says, every lumber region has its lore. Thrilling tales of adventure are told in camp wherever the logger has entered the wilderness. The lumberjack is an imaginative being, and a story loses none of its interest as it is carried and repeated from one camp to another. But stories that I know to have originated on the Penobscot and the Kennebec, what is that? Am I saying that right?
Mm, sounds good.
I mean, you're the one that likes to correct me, pal.
That sounds great.
Somewhat strengthened and improved in the redwood camps of Humboldt Bay. Mm. Yarns originating among the river drivers of the Ottawa, the St. Croix, and the Upper Mississippi are respun to groups of listening loggers on Vancouver Island. But every lumber district has its own peculiar tales. Mm. Some have their songs also, and nearly all have mysterious stories or vague rumors of dreadful beasts with which to regale newcomers and frighten people unfamiliar with the woods. Much has been written concerning the lumberjack and his life. Some of his songs, rough but full of the sentiment of his exciting vocation, have been commemorated, but so far as I know, very few of the strange creatures of his imagination have ever been described by the naturalist or sketched by the artist. The lumber regions are contracting. Sketches of forests that once seemed boundless are all but gone. And many a stream is quiet that once ran full of logs and echoed to the song of the river driver. Some say that the old type of logger himself is becoming extinct. It is my purpose in this little book to preserve at least a description and sketch of some of the interesting animals which he has originated. W.M.T. Cox.
Mm.
I mean, dude, incredible.
Yeah.
Like, he's describing this time period that we can only imagine. You know, people like riding these logs down a river.
Yeah.
You know, risking life and limb, probably literally.
Oh, yeah.
On a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And then seeped within this, dude, I don't know if you noticed, and listener, I don't know if you did either, but you can hear the love that he has for the wilderness
mm-hmm.
within that, you know? And it's just so cool. I love that.
I also find it interesting, too, that, like, you know, this is 1910 we're talking about. I mean, that's a mm-hmm. long time ago. Time of woe, almost said.
That's a long time of woe.
All these like names.
Almost 100 years ago.
Yeah, almost 100 years ago. And he's, even back then, he's sort of talking sort of affectionately about like days gone by. Like, you know, now mm-hmm. the forests aren't as full. And now,
yeah.
you know, he's talking about how like sort of the natural land has sort of, you know, disappeared due to like progress. Mm-hmm. You know,
mm-hmm. and it's like in one way he acknowledges and honors the lumberjack,
right?
And then also kind of makes a point to sort of kind of talk about the sadness of those areas being, you know, gone.
Yeah, right.
You know, mm-hmm. which is interesting.
Well, when we get back from the break, we are going to dive into the fearsome creatures of the lumber woods.
I like to read, and I feel like sometimes when I'm reading. Mm. I just, you know, I get distracted, man. I get distracted by life,
mm-hmm.
the pile of things that I have to do. And I'm not just talking about a honey-do list. I'm talking about work. I'm talking about podcasts. Mm. I'm talking about, you know, our Dungeons & Dragons games.
Oh, yeah.
There's so much that I have to do, and it's so easy to feel overwhelmed.
Oh, yeah.
And there are people out there that just like to chug coffee all day long. There are people out there that like to chug energy drinks. I won't say a brand, but energy
yeah.
drinks. All day long. And ultimately, like, it's just not that healthy for you. Well, luckily for us, we have a way for all of our listeners to not just have health benefits from this magic elixir mm. that we have talked about over the past couple of months, Magic Mind,
mm.
but they can get it at
not
a discount.
Not to be confused with Magic Mike.
That's right. That's a whole different story, and we don't have a discount for you there.
Mm-hmm.
But Magic Mind is just I mean, truthfully, now that we've been, I don't know, it's been a couple months now that we've been trying it out and testing it out. Mm-hmm. I guess you could call us guinea pigs. I'm not sure.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I can tell you that I feel more focused.
Same.
I feel less stressed. Mm-hmm. All of the worries that I have about being able to get to all the bullet points on my daily list, mm-hmm. I feel like, hey, you know what? I can get to those.
Yeah. And also, the funny thing about Magic Mind is we sort of, when we started out with this podcast, we always sort of had the approach of like, well, we're not going to be bogged down with ads. We're probably not going to do sponsorships unless we really like the product. And
yeah,
I've got to say, man, like Magic Mind, it does what it says it's going to do. I mean, it's hard to explain without taking it. Like it does sort of give you energy, but it also kind of like relaxes you and mm-hmm. everything sort of settles into place. Like it's hard to explain, but man, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah. And I mean, truthfully, just like you said, it's like we got to try it before we made the decision. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of their model with us. And I really, you know, I appreciated that yeah. because we don't want to, you know, talk about anything on our show that we just don't think is potentially beneficial for people. Mm-hmm. So anyhow, if you're interested in taking your year to the next level without feeling uber jittery mm-hmm. and or panicky or anxious, then I recommend Magic Mind. And our listeners, if you go to www.magicmind.com/brad and use our discount code BRAD20, then you can get 20% off. But now listen closely, guys. For the next 10 days with that code, you can actually get up to 56% off your subscription. Again, that link is www.magicmind.com/BRAD. And the discount code is BRAD20.
It's a pretty cool place. If you're a Martian.
Or a vampire. Or a vampire.
You think you really know what's happening around here, don't you?
If anyone out there wants to.
We're fighters for truth, justice, and the American way.
Hey, this is Woody.
And this is Tyler. And you're listening to That Would Be Rad.
And now, back to our show.
All right, so let's dive in. I'm going to be doing this first one because selfishly, this is my favorite one out of the whole book. So we're starting off with a bang. And, oh, and also, I have to say, the way that I discovered this book was, I mean, it's been a long time ago. Like maybe like 6 or 7 years ago, mm-hmm. somehow I ran across, you know, I went down the rabbit trail on like looking for like some sort of cryptid or something. And I ran across this image, which we'll feature over on Instagram. But the illustration, the drawing was like so intriguing to me because it was, mm-hmm. it was so bizarre and I had no idea what it was from. And I believe I used Google reverse image search just to find it. And that's what led me to the book. And the drawing was of this cryptid called the Hoogag. Rhinopes inarticulatus is the nomenclature of that. The Hoogag is a huge animal of the Lake States. Its range includes western Wisconsin, northern Minnesota, and a territory extending indefinitely northward in the Canadian wilds towards Hudson Bay. In size, the Hoogag may be compared to the moose, and in form, it somewhat resembles that animal. Very noticeably, however, are its jointless legs, which compel the animal to remain on its feet, and its long upper lip, which compel the animal...
Feet. Hey, man. It doesn't have its jointless legs, which compel the animal to remain on its feet.
You're so stupid. Okay. Very noticeably, however, are its jointless legs, which compel the animal to remain on its feet, and its long upper lip, which prevents it from grazing. If it tried that method of feeding, it would simply tramp its upper lip into the dirt. Its head and neck are leathery and hairless. Its strangely corrugated ears flop downward. Its four-toed feet, long bushy tail, shaggy coat, and general makeup give the beast an unmistakably prehistoric appearance. The Hoogag has a perfect mania for traveling, and few hunters who have taken up its trail ever come up with the beast or even come back to camp. It is reported to keep going all day long, browsing on twigs, flopping its lip around trees, and stripping bark as occasional offers. And at night, since it cannot lie down, it leans against a tree, bracing its hind legs and marking time with its front ones. The most successful hoogag hunters have adopted the practice of notching trees so that they are almost ready to fall. And then when the hoogag leans up against one, both the tree and the animal come down. In its helpless condition, it is then easily dispatched. The last one killed, so far as known, was on Turtle River in northern Minnesota, where a young one, weighing 1,800 pounds, was found stuck in the mud. It was knocked in the head by Mike Flynn of Cass Lake.
Man, you know, looking at this picture, you know what, it kind of looks like, let's just for a second, I'm going to put on, not a skeptic's hat, but if I were just seeing it for the first time, I would say, man, this thing looks like a diseased moose.
Yeah. Yes, for sure.
And then at the same time, when they describe this lip just wrapping it around trees and stuff, just trying to slurp up, it's kind of like sad and hilarious at the same time.
Yeah, it's like super sad, really, because it can't.
Yeah, he's kind of like the dumb one of the animal kingdom.
I mean, sort of. Yeah, it can't lay down. I don't understand exactly how is it like feeding? Like, what are they saying here? They're saying like,
you know, oh boy,
they're saying basically that they like use these huge like sort of lips,
to strip bark.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
weird.
It is really weird. Yeah, I would say basically it's like a moose with like jointless legs, so they're just completely straight up until sort of like its neck, and then it goes like hairless.
Yeah,
which is interesting.
You see what I'm saying though? It seems like it's like if you imagined a moose had an allergic reaction, something like a snake bit in its mouth and it just swelled up extremely large.
Yeah, yeah.
But even and then just go further with the swelling. And then you've got, you know, it's just walking around with these straight legs, the poor thing.
It actually does remind me of my allergic reaction that time. Mm. Have I told that story on the podcast?
I think so.
Let me just get into it for the new listeners.
Okay.
So my wife goes out of town, which is probably why this happened. And I'm pumping gas at a gas station. I've never been to this gas station before, but, you know, I needed gas. So I pulled in. I'm pumping gas. I notice, man, something smells amazing. I look over right beside the gas station in the same like little mini strip mall is a seafood restaurant called Bucket O Shrimp.
And that's when you know, hey, look, we're not in Florida. We're not near the coast. This place has to have fresh food.
Oh, for sure.
That's what's going on in Tyler's head.
Oh, yeah. And it's winter.
This is Bucket O Shrimp.
Yeah, Bucket O Shrimp. So I go in. I'm so excited. I get a shrimp po' boy, as you do.
Oh, God.
I go home, eat it. I mean, it's glorious. Absolutely delicious. Everything's fine. I wake up in the middle of the night, and like, kind of feeling weird. I have like kind of a headache. Like I just had this like sort of ringing in my ears, my face, my whole face is just sort of like hot. So I get up and I like turn the, you know, bump the air down a little bit. And I think I go back to bed, and then I ended up waking up in the morning and I go to look in the mirror and like my whole face is like the movie Hitch. Like totally swollen. My eyes are almost totally swollen shut. My lips are like, they look like, you know, straight up like Hollywood housewives. I, you know, ended up having to go to the hospital and all that stuff. They ended up giving me an EpiPen just in case it happened again.
Good Lord, man.
But yeah, I looked like the hoogag.
And just in case you're wondering, listeners, especially if you're new to the show, this is pretty, like, this is
common.
Tyler's, yeah. He's got like, he, in some ways, like, he won't eat an onion.
Oh, hell
yeah. But he'll walk into the most sketchy food establishment that, like, basically, they might as well have a sign instead of it saying Bucket O Shrimp. Mm. It should just be like, get your food poisoning here. And Tyler is still walking in there. He's going to take about 20 minutes at the menu. But when he finally orders, he's going to just scarf it down and he's going to swear by it. And he's going to be like, this is the best XYZ that I've ever had in my life. And he's going to have a near-death experience.
Which, by the way,
it happens like so often.
Can you explain? Yeah, this is why we love Curb Your Enthusiasm. Like, it's sort of been an ongoing joke with our band that, like, I'm like a young Larry David.
Young Larry David.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But can you explain your version, and we're going to get back to the book, but can you explain your version of how I am in restaurants?
You know, and I think like the problem is I've kind of become a little bit that way where, you know, once I'm kind of just, everybody's all around, you're having a fun time, you're socializing, you're like, hey, yeah, I'll figure out what I want in just a second. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden everyone else is ready and you're like, oh, okay. And everyone else is ordering and you're like, I'll go last. And then the sweats. You're just in full panic attack mode. And the way I envision how you see the menu, it went from, oh, everything's written in English to like all the words are jumbled. I don't know what I should, I don't. It's like this weird panic thing that Tyler has about like, it's like paralysis by analysis.
It is, yeah.
But like on the highest level I've ever witnessed.
It's like onset dyslexia. But only for menus.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. And so I think I just said hoogog. So it's hoogag.
Hoogag.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, just making it known. Mm-hmm. All right. The next one.
Which, by the way, before you get started, I hate to interrupt.
For goodness
sake. I rarely interrupt, but I think it's necessary now.
This always gets food poisoning. Rarely interrupts. Go ahead.
This is also volume one of us covering this book. Because it's just fascinating, and I know we can't get through all of them, so we will like revisit some of these if you know, if you don't hear like your favorite critter.
It always makes me when I hear the word critter, it always makes me think of your grandpa. You know, that's like definitely a word.
I could see him, yeah, for sure.
Now just hold this thing right here. He wants you to hold a metal object while he's like showing you that it sparks and just like, you know, thousands of volts of electricity. Yeah. Amazing. Just hold it right there. Watch this. And you're like, no, I'm good. Okay. They just don't make them like they used to do the water. Okay. This creature is called the Gumbaroo. Its Latin nomenclature is Megalogaster repercussus. In the foggy region along the Pacific coast, from Gray's Harbor to Humboldt Bay, there ranges a kind of creature that has caused much annoyance in lumberwoods. This is the Gumbaroo, which, luckily, is so rare that only once in a great while is one seen. It is believed to remain in hiding most of the time in the base of enormous, burned-out cedar trees from where it sallies forth occasionally on frightful, marauding expeditions. During these periods of activity, the beast is always hungry and devours anything it can find that looks like food. A whole horse may be eaten at one sitting, distending the Gumbaroo out of all proportions, but failing to appease its hunger or cause it the slightest discomfort. The specimens seen are reported to have been coal black, but that may have been due to their being smirched with the charred wood. So I guess what they're saying here is like in forests where they're, you know, maybe there's been a forest fire or something like that, it's making a home inside these burnout large cedar trees, okay.
Maybe like controlled burn.
Well, that or just like natural, natural stuff. To be sure, it has prominent eyebrows and some long, bristly hairs on its chin, but the body is smooth, tough, and shiny, and bears not even a wrinkle. The animal is a tireless traveler when looking for food, but is not swift in its movements or annoyed in the slightest degree by the presence of enemies. The latter characteristic is easily accounted for by the fact that no other animal within its range has ever found a successful method of attacking a Gumbaroo or a vulnerable spot in one's anatomy. Whatever strikes the beast bounds off with the same force. Its elastic hide hurls back with equal ease the charging elk and the wrathy hornet. A rock or peavey thrown at the creature bounds back at whoever threw it, and a bullet shot against its hide is sure to strike the hunter between the eyes. It is believed that the scarcity of Gumbaroos is due to their combustible character and the prevalence of forest fires. The animal burns like celluloid with explosive force, frequently during and after a forest fire in the heavy cedar near Coos Bay. Woodmen have insisted they heard loud reports quite unlike the sound of falling trees and detected the smell of burning rubber in the air.
Interesting.
Wow. You know what it kind of reminds me of?
Hmm.
Looking at it, it looks like kind of a, let's just say, a mix between like a bear and a beaver.
Yeah, right.
And you know how like beaver skin and like platypus to some degree, mm-hmm. like anything that's more like sort of some semi-aquatic like that.
Yeah.
Has a really sort of like tough, sort of almost like a seal or a sea lion, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There's like a lot of blubber and stuff, and it would be kind of hard to pierce.
Yeah, right.
That's kind of what it reminds me of. But I guess they're saying, because that would also burn, you know, like whale blubber and all that is used for fuel by the Inuits.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of too. One of the things about this book and some of these creatures, also, like, in some of the later iterations, like, I think some creatures were added.
Mm.
I think, like, in some of the more modern ones, they included, like, the Jersey Devil, you know, like a Bigfoot-type character. Mm. But one of the things about this is, like, a lot of these characters do this thing where they just, like, they're known for, like, exploding or just sort of, like, bursting, like, popping.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really interesting because it's a really sort of convenient way of like getting rid of evidence, I think. Mm, you know, mm-hmm. you know, for people to be like, why haven't we found anything? And it's like, well
they just pop.
It's because they explode.
Mm-hmm.
The next one we're going to hit is the roperite. And that is...
Boy, this one's the toughest to sort of justify in my mind a little bit. But go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. It is. And that is the Ryan Corypus, which is like my brother.
Jeez, we got to tell that story.
It's the Ryan Corypus
in the Patreon.
Flagelliformis. In the foothills of the Sierras, where the digger pine grows, dwells one of the most peculiarly specialized animals to be found anywhere on the American continent. No one knows its life history, even approximately, and many a discussion has been based upon the question as to whether the beast is born, hatched from eggs, or comes into existence spontaneously from some mountain cavern. The Digger Indians say that the roperites are the spirits of early Spanish ranchers, and blood-curdling are the tales they tell of hapless creatures pursued by the beast, snared with its marvelous rope-like beak and dragged to death through thorny chaparral. No man or animal can hope to outrun it. It steps upon roadrunners or kicks them out of the way, and no obstacles appears sufficient to stop its progress or even slacken its speed, as it seemingly half flies, half bounds across the rugged country which it inhabits. Its leathery skin is impervious to thorn, and its flipper legs uninjured by the sharpest rocks. According to A.B. Patterson of Hot Springs, California, who saw the last roperite authentically reported, the animal has a large set of rattles on its tail, which it vibrates when in pursuit of game, thus producing a whirring sound like that of a giant rattler. The effect of this upon an animal closely pursued may be imagined. Lumbermen operating in the region between Pitt River and the southern end of the Sierras are urgently requested to make every effort to secure a living specimen of the roperite.
Yeah, this one, for those of you that haven't yet seen this on our Instagram,
mm-hmm.
boy, it looks like a mix between like a some kind of waterfowl, like a heron or an egret,
mm-hmm.
mixed with like a jackrabbit.
Yeah,
and then it's got at the end of its beak a long like rope like snare, and it's chasing a rabbit.
Yeah,
I mean, this might be the wild so far.
Yeah,
this is the craziest one.
I mean, the hoogag is like pretty weird, but
you know, reminiscent of
yeah
of you. So.
Okay, yeah. No, I mean, the hoogag is like
yeah
pretty hard to swallow as far as it being real, but this one is like, I mean, it literally its beak turns into like a rope with like a lasso at the end.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the hoogag, I guess, is hard to believe, but it could also, like, to me, it's easily
like a moose.
I guess explained as like, oh, it's a diseased animal, and maybe it's got like tetanus or something. Mm-hmm. That's why it looks like it doesn't have any joints, because it's just walking around crazy or deformed or whatever.
Right. This, whatever. Yeah.
But you can't really explain it away.
One of the things that I do love so much about this book and these characters is, I don't know, it's like the idea of these loggers sort of like sitting around the fire. Maybe they're you know, kicking back Pappy's cough medicine a little bit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to pass the time, I mean, they're you know, holed up out in these massive, like, forests. They're sitting around the fire at night. The only thing to, like, maybe keep them entertained is, like, telling these stories or these tall tales and, like, kind of making up these things. And I think it's cool, and it's something that's kind of missing in today's age with, like, you know, we just pull out the black rectangle in our pocket and, like, we have all of the world's entertainment at our fingertips, whereas, like, back then they didn't have that. So I think it's kind of a testament to that sort of, you know, necessity is the mother of invention, where they didn't have anything to entertain themselves, so they just sort of made up these sort of wild, they used their imagination, and, you know, I think it's really cool. And I think also, like, the idea of some of these things, like, being, like, based off of other things, you know? Mm-hmm. I think that's definitely probably a component of this as well.
Yeah. I mean, this one certainly, to me, mm-hmm. out of all of them, kind of seems more like the, hey, we're sitting around the campfire. These guys just, they're like young, probably 15-year-old kids that are wanting to be loggers. And they're like, now sit down, let me tell you something. Mm-hmm. If you ever come across this thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know?
It's very much like, I mean, almost exactly like the snipe when we were kids.
Yeah. Yeah, snipe hunting at night and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like you never quite, at least for me, I feel like I did it numerous times as a kid, like it being sort of done to me when I was younger, and then me sort of doing the same thing to like my cousins as I got older. Mm-hmm. But like it never totally had like an exact sort of, like it. Nobody ever really knew exactly what it looked like. It was always like, oh, well, it sounds like a,
just kind of
like a raccoon mixed with a bird mixed with a frog, or like all these weird sort of kind of attributes. I mean, kind of like the jackalope.
Yeah.
That's like another one, you know. But I think that's cool. It's like a lot of this stuff probably we would never know about without this book. You know, it's this sort of.
Yeah, it would have been lost in time for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
And these are like things that, at the very least, if they exist or not, these are things that people talked about, you know, enough so that these guys wrote a book about it. And you know, maybe they embellished some of these and just kind of made them up for the book to sell copies. But I mean, I don't know. I don't think, it doesn't really seem, I don't know. It seems cooler than that.
Yeah, for sure.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
America's future can be determined by our dreams and our visions.
It was very intense, broad line.
For over 200 years, there have been reports of giant, man-like creatures.
From another dimension, another world, I don't know.
The most intriguing mystery on the North American continent.
This is Joshua Cutchin, and you're at my home for weirdness. That would be rad.
Next up is...
Nope, it's my turn. It's my turn, pal. I'll say who's next up. Thank you.
You're going to love this last paragraph.
Oh, boy. All right. The next one that we're going to talk about is the Snollygoster. Now, before we get too deep into it, not to be confused with the Snallygaster.
I'm glad you said
and
that.
And I'll talk about that in just a second as well, after I read this description. And it is, its Latin nomenclature is Dorso Hastatus caudirotula.
Very good.
In the cypress swamps of the south, now we're talking, and particularly in the region about Lake Okeechobee, Florida, woodmen tell of a strange and dangerous animal known as the Snollygoster. This creature is of enormous proportions and is credited with a voracious appetite. Worst of all, its appetite is only appeased by the eating of human beings. Mm. In form, the Snollygoster resembles a huge crocodile, but it's covered with long, glossy fur and has no legs or fins, except one long spike on its back. A person naturally wonders how such an animal can manage to travel through the water and mud of the swamp region where it lives, but nature has provided it with a means for driving itself along. On the end of its tail are three bony plates, much resembling the propeller on a steamboat.
Oh.
Yeah.
Jeez. At least it doesn't have a snare nose. Okay. These revolve at a... Oh, boy. These are...
Hell yeah.
We're just now starting to go from most believable to least believable as we get deeper in. These revolve at a terrific rate, driving the animal like a torpedo boat through the mud. You heard that right, folks. This thing's got a propeller. They serve other purposes as well. For when a snollagoster catches an unfortunate pick... Love it. Or even a... You son of a gun. A pick, I think, is a derogatory term, too. And I just said I loved it.
Or even a full-grown...
God. The best is you were just sitting there waiting.
Just waiting on you to step on
that. Because you knew my eyes would finally step on that landmine.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
You know, obviously, this is an old book, and we don't write like that anymore, okay?
God, we just talked about how much we love this book so much.
Good Lord. Well, if we're still around after this episode's released, then here we go.
What if every story from here on is
just racist as heck? Yeah. Oh, man, I don't even know what this is going to say. Let's see. Let me do a little real-time editing of this read here. Ah, okay, so basically, they serve other purposes as well. For when a snollygoster catches an unfortunate victim, whether it's a small one or a full-grown victim, upon which it delights to feed. Oh, even better, it delights to feed. Huh?
It loves it.
It tosses the victim up and backwards so as to impale him on the spike fin, where several may be carried until sufficient for a meal have been collected. We're really starting to get pretty fantastic with the stories here.
Oh, yeah.
The snollygoster's tail is then driven into the mud and revolved until a hole is scooped out and the victim's scraped off the spike and tossed in, whereupon the snollygoster beats them into a batter with its rapidly revolving propeller and then inhales them.
Mm.
Mr. Inman F. Eldridge of Dafuniac Springs, Florida, while hunting for an outlaw in the swamps, had a most unusual experience. He caught sight of the outlaw, dead and impaled upon what at first appeared to be a slender cypress knee. It was then seen to be the spike on a snollygoster's back. Eldridge's first impulse was to shoot the strange beast, but upon second thought, he concluded that it was doing... Oh, my God.
Yikes.
Okay, because it was a... Well, it was an outlaw. Yeah. This is a tough one to get through. But upon second thought, he concluded that it was doing good work and was entitled to live on, because I guess it caught that outlaw. Mm-hmm. The very report of such a creature inhabiting the swamps would deter evildoers from venturing into these wild places to avoid their pursuers and escape justice.
Man.
Now.
I love it.
That's the most, I gotta say, not only was it difficult because there's some terminology in there that is just unacceptable, but that is definitely the most sort of outlandish one yet. And here I was thinking that the noose.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's just outlandish. Now.
This is William Thomas
For those
Cox
of you listening, the first thing that I, kind of, initially, I just kind of looked at the list. Haven't read the descriptions yet. Mm-hmm. But when I saw this one, I was like, I wonder if it's so almost phonetically similar, really.
Mm-hmm.
Spelled very differently, but just like the way it sounds.
Right.
A lot like the snollygaster.
Yeah.
And so I thought, well, is there something close to that?
Yep.
Well, the thing is, and we're going to do a full episode on the snollygaster because it's pretty rad.
Oh, yeah.
It's sort of almost, what's his name?
Sort of a classic.
Lovecraftian beast, you know, of real American folklore, and I love it. But the snollygaster is a bird reptile chimera originating in the superstitions of early German immigrants. And what's interesting about it that I didn't know until kind of like, hey, I wonder what, is it's sort of, the first kind of times that it was sort of mentioned here, I guess, in the 18th century was in like the 1730s. in this German community of immigrants was being terrorized by this monster called a Schnellergeist, which means quick ghost in German. And so it's like half bird, and it's certainly different. In other words, it doesn't have a biological organic propeller that it uses for various functions. Mm-hmm. So different. I don't know. Maybe once we do the Snallygaster, by the time we do that, we can kind of figure out if there's some sort of correlation between the two in terms of origin. But I doubt it.
Yeah, the Snallygaster is really cool because it's one of those that was like clearly brought over by the immigrants, and then, you know, it's kind of like ours now, which is pretty cool here in the States.
Mm-hmm.
The next one, well, actually, before we move on, the one interesting thing about the Snallygaster, which you were just saying, is as outlandish and wild it is having like a propeller, it is pretty interesting that, especially for, you know, around 1910 when this book came out, it is interesting that it was sort of down in the swamps, so you wouldn't see it, and all you would see is this sort of spike, like, moving around, almost like a shark fin type situation, which I think is kind of cool, you know?
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. The design of it and the just overall kind of description is very innovative.
Yeah.
And cool.
Mm-hmm.
That said, you know, I'm not really sure of a lot of animals that are of that size. Now, of course, there's like micro. Right now, Clay is making a list that he's going to send me, but there's
for sure
microorganisms that, you know, have some sort, you know, some cool sort of mechanisms, I guess,
propulsion
that they use
stuff.
For propulsion stuff. But I, off the top of my head, I can't think of animals that would utilize something as complex as
like a propeller. What
is that? Propeller wheel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
One thing that I think is interesting, too, is, you know, I feel like at first glance, all these are just sort of like, well, there's no way that this could, it could never, you know, exist, you know, evolutionarily or whatever. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. It would have died out, you know, way long time ago. But, I mean, I gotta say, I mean, well, other than like a propeller on its tail, it does kind of, if you look at it, like, you know, with wide-eyed childlike wonder. I mean, some of these things could fall in line with things like the duck-billed platypus and like those weird sort of juxtaposed animals in the animal kingdom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, too, I think it's fair to say, well, first, let's just, can we all agree, listeners, Tyler and I, let's all agree that this stuff is just, again, kind of like what we talked about. I think we mentioned it briefly last week, where, look, there's stuff that exists even still today that is just, you know, crazy looking, you know, or super small or super like, wow, holy moly, what the heck is that? I think, too, the other agreement here is, and I'm not trying to explain away stuff, but you can see how at a time when there was no such thing as television, the only thing, and I try to increasingly impart this on my children, the only thing they had to use was their imagination about things. And so when they're viewing something that maybe they haven't seen before, their mind is doing a lot of work for them, and they can, you know, they probably can mentally embellish whatever it is and exaggerate whatever it is that they're looking at.
Right.
And then that then passes down orally over time, and then it turns into, man, that bird had a dadgum noose on it.
Yeah.
Or this thing, you know, lives in a burnt tree. I mean, dude, they could have just been seeing a bloated carcass,
right.
Or they could have seen, you know what I mean? There's just so many things that they could have seen.
Yeah.
And then over time it turns into this, which I just think is awesome.
It is awesome. And it kind of reminds me, you know, along the line of thinking of, like, you know, around like the Mothman sightings, you had sort of quote unquote the experts that came in were like, oh, no, these people are just seeing the sandhill crane, or they're seeing, you know, like some sort of big owl that was in the area. And so maybe that is the case. I like to believe that there was a true Mothman at that time. But with this stuff, like, maybe they were actually seeing this, and then, you know, they allowed their super creative imagination to kind of fill in the gaps.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's super cool, and it's, I mean, it really is just like fun too, you know?
Yeah.
And speaking of immigrants bringing over folklore and, you know, sort of their own personal, strange beast. This next one, while the spelling is different from what we're typically used to, this is the leprechaun, Cimidiabilis hibernicus horribilis is the nomenclature for that one. During the early days of Upper Canada, before it became the province of Ontario, there were brought into a logging camp on the Madawaska River several young leprechauns from the north of Ireland. This animal was even then rare and has since become extinct in its native land. That's pretty sad. It is said that during the last famine, hungry Irishmen killed and ate the few remaining specimens of this queer beast. Yikes. On its native bogs, the leprechaun was a harmless creature, celebrated for its playfulness and laughable antics. It would hop across the bogs, turn somersaults, and leap over hillocks with wondrous agility. A favorite trick was to bore into a pile of drying peat and then, with a sudden spring, send clods of peat high into the air till the commotion looked like a young cyclone. These antics were all right enough in Ireland, but when the animal was brought to Canada, its disposition changed at once. The pets on the Madawaska escaped into nearby tamarack swamps, increasing and spreading until an occasional one was seen on the upper Ottawa and even over in northern Michigan. Sneaking, which by the way, that's interesting. Sneaking through the tamarack and cedar, or leaping across the muskegs after whatever appealed to it as food, the leprechaun became a creature to be feared and avoided. Teamsters toting supplies across swamp roads have been attacked by the animal, which would bound clear over the load, snapping its teeth at the driver and reaching for him with its villainous claws. Hasty flight to thick timber, leaving the team to its fate, was the only choice of the driver, who thanked his stars that in running through tangled tamarack, even the leprechaun is no match for a frightened man. So This kind of sounds like the little red dwarf character. I think it was Detroit.
Yeah,
originally.
I think so.
I mean, that's kind of cool.
We talked about that in this episode.
You can hear more about this rad strangeness on That Would Be Rad, Season 2, Episode 36, Michigan Monsters and Mysteries.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Also, it's odd to me, and this is something that is kind of fascinating too, is like, you know, we brought this up numerous times, how the idea of like fairies or the fae was sort of co-opted by Disney. And so after that sort of mass production of Peter Pan, you know, now whenever we think of a fairy, it's always going to sort of somehow resemble Tinkerbell. And so same with like the leprechaun, I feel like in a way, you know, we just think, oh, it's just like a little dwarf kind of guy with like a red beard and all this stuff. But it's interesting because in this, they're not talking like it's just like a little man. They're talking like it's, you know, they call it a beast. They call it a pet. They talk about how it like snaps its teeth at the driver of this truck and it's reaching for him with its villainous claws. So
in the picture itself, it looks like a little, like almost like a little, I mean, I would say troll.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Or even like a little, like, ape man kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, like, this is a perfect example of...
We will return after these messages.
Something out there waiting for us.
Hey, this is Bryce Johnson from the Bigfoot Collectors Club, and you're listening to Tyler and Woody on That Would Be Rad, because that is rad.
To your point, we always have this singular image of whatever it is that we're talking about. And, you know, maybe it's our own sort of course, because they're sort of mysterious creatures and elusive and all that, maybe it's our own ignorance to the experience of being around them. and thinking that they're all the same.
Right.
Right. But I, like any kind of humanoid creature, I think just like our own pets in our houses, right?
Mm-hmm.
I have a cat, or I've had cats that are just completely different. Every single one of them, even on that quote unquote simplistic level of intelligence, mm-hmm. they have their own personality.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think it's fair to assume that just because it's a leprechaun, mm-hmm. doesn't, you know, not all of them are just going to be like, hey, you know, here's a golden coin or whatever.
Right.
It's, there's all this other stuff. And then, you know, maybe that you've now cornered this creature that ended up in this place that it doesn't recognize and is pretty different than, you know, Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
And it's frightened. It doesn't know what to do. It lashes out in, you know, defensively. You know, there's just all kinds of stuff that goes into that sort of mixing in that legend and folklore into that early American experience. It's I don't know, man. That kind of stuff like this is so fascinating.
Yeah.
That mixture of folklore when those worlds sort of collide, mm-hmm. I think is really fascinating.
And also for these ones that are sort of being brought over, you know, by the immigrants, you know, I mean, it's hard for me not to like go back to like the Fomorians. That like, mm-hmm. if there's any truth in this, and you know, these things are known for being of Irish descent, maybe there's like some truth to this. Like maybe it is something that like, you know, maybe it's long extinct or whatever, but like, mm-hmm. I don't know. I love that sort of romanticized idea that like these things, you know, were real at some time. One thing too, that I think that's a really good point what you brought up is like, maybe when they were sort of in Ireland, you know, hundreds of years prior, maybe they were more, I don't know, what do you say, like sophisticated or civilized, but you know, they're sort of brought over as like pets and, you know, maybe to exist over here in the Americas, you know, they had to like live in the forest. So maybe they did sort of revert back to this sort of feral, mm-hmm. you know,
existence
condition. Yeah.
Well, see, I thought you were going to take it in a different direction because sometimes we talk about on our show how the existence of specifically something like the leprechaun or the trickster mm-hmm. archetype that exists in so many cultures, the reason that they exist is somewhat, you know, it's kind of like the Neil Gaiman American Gods.
Oh, yeah.
Telling. So in other words, their existence is strengthened by the belief of them and people talking about them and recounting their stories mm-hmm. and, you know, all of that. And so to me, what I was thinking about is, you know, you've got these immigrant populations and then let's say like, you know, the first generation that was born here in the U.S.,
mm-hmm.
young, travels out to, you know, be a logger.
Right.
And doesn't really necessarily believe. And then they're like, so tell us a story about what, and then because they're sort of bringing that into the mix,
mm-hmm.
it's creating that sort of egregore, is that right?
Yeah, sort of, yeah.
Am I using that correctly? It's like, it's bringing that into existence mm-hmm. and perhaps it's a version that's much less, not sophisticated in terms of like intellect and stuff, but in terms of like, the amount of detail and correctness of the legend,
yeah.
you know, if we're making that assumption that we have that sort of loosely kind of using this term, but that power to bring those things
like a
forth,
thought
basically.
Form or tulpa.
Yeah. I think that's something interesting too, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Especially, man, I've never really thought of that, but I mean, we are a little off topic from like sort of the, if you look at it, like just, you know, for its like campiness, we're kind of going a little down the trail here, but yeah, I've never thought of something that you just like brought up. And that is like this idea of, you know, say you have this huge camp of loggers and there's one Irishman, right? And that one Irishman knows exactly what these leprechauns looked like because he's from Ireland. And maybe he actually would see these things when he was in Ireland. Well, none of these other loggers have ever heard or seen this thing, but he explains it. Well, maybe he doesn't fully explain exactly how it looked. And so all these loggers are sort of filling in the gaps in their own mind mm-hmm. of like, mm-hmm. oh, well, he didn't say that it had claws, but in my mind, I see it having claws.
Yeah.
And so it's this like sort of mass, like mm-hmm. like an egregore, like thought form, where they're sort of creating this thing in, you know, bringing it into existence. But maybe it's like completely different from what the Irishman mm-hmm. was originally, you know, even talking about. I think that's cool.
Right. Yeah, man. I mean, that's kind of, or like, I'll take it another quick direction in terms of just like on the biology side of things.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just say, like, so often, you know, biology has a way of, or it's like Mother Nature or whatever, but biologically, there are things built into just, I guess, the formation of a creature mm-hmm. or an animal or a plant or whatever, to where if there is a mutation mm-hmm. of any sort and it somehow hinders its ability to reproduce, then of course that mutation won't successfully live on in whatever animal or plant that we're talking about, okay?
Mm-hmm.
This is, again, my brother's making fun of me as he's listening to this. Let's not forget that I made a D in genetics in college 2 times in a row. Mm-hmm. So I blame the professor. Anyway, very, very basic level. But what's neat, though, is some of those mutations might still exist. So in other words, what I'm trying to say is...
I'm simply saying that life finds a way.
I like to think about how some of these creatures could have been seen at some point mm-hmm. by these loggers.
Right.
Maybe not as like exaggerated in form.
Right.
Of course, I'm not talking about the leprechaun at this point. Maybe not as... You know, specifically, maybe it didn't have a motorized freaking steamboat.
Like a propeller.
Propeller, right. Yeah. It didn't have a motorized steamboat propeller.
Yeah, right.
You know, some of these things could have been able to reproduce. And like I said, at that time, who knows what they could have seen. But it is, you know, in some parts of this story, and I think that's the thing about folklore, right? Like the thing that makes it fascinating at all is that there's just enough truth in there
mm-hmm.
that it makes it like you can kind of buy it,
right.
But then it goes past, I mean, not just past, but it just like goes way past that line of well, you know, and I think it's easier for us now to look back on these types of things and be like, how could these people have believed it? But again,
and I hate that.
No TV.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no TV, man.
Right.
Like telling stories, we just do it in a different way now that's more of sort of like mass produced, like movies and all that kind of
right.
stuff. And just like any good movie, a good story, a good book, whatever, there's got to be something that you can kind of connect to on like a reality level
mm-hmm.
that sort of makes that story like believable.
Right.
And just because it's like an exaggeration of that truth doesn't mean that it's, you know, I don't know. I love it.
Yeah. No, I do too. I also, you know, like going back to the Snollygaster with like the propeller, I mean, I feel like, you know, I think there are like some sharks that like can exist, like even if it's just sort of...
They don't have propellers, man.
Well,
don't
no. But they can exist briefly like in like sort of brackish waters.
Oh, yeah.
And so it is in Florida. And so how do we know that some guy... So maybe he's from Canada.
Yeah, right.
Northwest. Right. He doesn't know anything about what he's looking at. And he sees this swamp, which is like, you know, maybe a mile in from the ocean. And he sees this huge shark fin, which doesn't look anything like what a regular quote unquote...
Any animal he's used to looking
at. Yeah, no other like fish has that giant fin. And he sees this thing like moving around. And, you know, maybe I'm sure the propeller is sort of an embellishment. But...
But still, like maybe that's just the only way he could describe it based on what is the same reason, again, we always, not to tie every single episode,
here we go,
kind of together here, but we talk about how the evolution of unidentified flying objects and stuff, and everyone, you can only view what you're looking at through the lens of your prior experience.
Right. Or even so, your like sort of cultural understanding at the time.
Sure. And so, like, a steamboat, that's the only thing he could think of. And I want to make another point real quick. You know, you mentioned that, well, you know, maybe he's from up north. We're making a lot of assumptions there because, like, you're thinking about it, early 1900s, late 1800s, people aren't just, like, taking off a few days to go to the beach.
Right, for sure.
So this guy may never, ever in his life have seen a shark.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's one of those that, you know, is in a brackish water situation and that's what he sees, that makes a whole lot of sense, yeah, man.
I think so too, man. Now, the wingless bird with the noose at the end of its beak, I don't have anything for you on that one, but...
Well, I think maybe if I was going to like try to explain it, some kid saw a bird that had a snake in its mouth.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, maybe.
Or in its beak.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've seen, you know, living by the lake, we see a lot of blue herons and gray egrets and stuff. Yeah. And sometimes if one of those, or even a hawk that has a snake in its mouth, you're like, what in the world? And, you know, I mean, again, if they don't have a whole lot of reference, there's not like these people aren't, this is not a condescending statement here, but they're not going to school really at that time and getting the same education depending on where they were, you know, situated in the States. And so like, who knows if they know what the heck that looks like, you know?
Yeah. And this was before the, probably a little before the Rockefeller Education Initiative, which brainwashed us.
Here we go. I knew it was happening.
Up until now. Mm-hmm. So who knows?
Now, after seeing all of that, this one might even be harder to believe or explain. Now that we're kind of digging in, there's a lot of these, and we don't want to get too long in the tooth here. Mm-hmm. So I think this next one should be our last one.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to close it out today with something called the Funeral Mountain Tarashot.
Nice.
In Latin, funerary corpus displasticimum. Said it weird. Displasticimum.
I think it's great.
This animal explains the origin of the name of the funeral range, California. The creature has a cast. First off, have you ever heard of the funeral range?
No.
Okay, me neither.
Sounds scary.
I guess it sounds like a happening spot back in 1910. The creature has a casket-like body, 6 to 8 feet long, with a shell running the whole length of its back.
Mm.
Its four legs are long and wobbly, causing the tarashot to sway uncertainly from side to side and forward and backward as it travels along. Well, that sounds terrifying.
Yeah.
Oh, here we go. The strange beast was first reported by some Mormon immigrants who observed a peculiar procession entering the desert from a certain mountain range, afterward named the Funeral Mountains. They also witnessed the tragic fate of the creatures. One of the Mormons, aroused by his curiosity, made an investigation, which resulted in finding out about all that is known of the tarashot. It seems that the animal lives in the little meadows and parks in the higher portions of the range, where it gradually increases in numbers until, by a strange impulse, it is seized by a desire to immigrate. Hmm. They then form long processions and march down into the desert. This seems like a social commentary about Mormons, but okay. with the evident intention of crossing to other ranges that can be seen in the distance, but none of them ever gets across. As they encounter the hot sands, they rapidly descend with the heat, and one after another, they blow up with resounding reports, leaving deep, grave-shaped holes in the sand.
Oh, man.
Now, again, when you see the picture of this thing, like I said, I mean, it sounds like this guy's just kind of like talking trash about Mormons because, you know, at that time, there was a lot of, you know, quote-unquote pilgrimage kind of thing, you know, these wagon trains as they were leaving, I guess, from Illinois to Utah and stuff. And so, it kind of sounds like he's just talking trash a little bit and just being like, I don't know, it's, you know, is he threatening them? Is he like, you know? Anyway.
One thing that I think is interesting is, like, I guess my question is did the Funeral Mountain Range come first and then they sort of created this story to kind of make sense of the name? Or did this story come first and then that led to, like, oh, yeah, it's just called the Funeral Mountains, you know, the Funeral Mountain Range.
Yeah.
Because of these sort of procession, you know, like a funeral, these animals.
It's very, I mean, I don't know, man. There's like a part of me that like wants to make fun of it a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
But then as you look at, now you look at the original illustration and it kind of looks like a reject reel from like a very early Disney cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
There's like a cartoony face on it,
yeah,
and all this.
Right.
But if you kind of expand on that and look at other images online and stuff, you know what it kind of reminds me of?
Mm.
Forget about the sort of more flat description of it kind of being quote unquote casket.
Yeah, shaped. That's the interesting.
But it kind of reminds me of like a stegosaurus kind of thing.
Mm.
Without the tail, of course, but you know, sort of like a sort of boxy armor type desert creature.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I don't know.
Yeah, the top, the flat sort of top, like its back and head just makes no sense at all.
Yeah.
And then I love that like when they explode, it leaves like those like perfectly grave-shaped holes in the sand.
Yeah. Look at this. I'm gonna show you this picture of something that I found, and it's just like, you know, an artist's rendition of it. And so that's why I say it kind of reminds me of some sort of like mix between a You know what I mean? Like some sort of an animal that had this kind of turtle shell.
It almost looked very like Star Wars-ish. This picture feels like something you would see.
It's pretty cool.
Well, folks, if you enjoyed these fearsome creatures of the lumber woods, come back because we're definitely going to be getting into this in the future. These are only a handful that we've went over today, but they're all super weird and super interesting. And yeah, we for sure will get into rambling on, you know, the commentary of what truths are, you know, sort of hidden in these things, or are they just completely made up whole cloth?
Mm-hmm.
If you would like to find us online, we are over on Instagram. Leave a comment, leave a like, tell your friends about the show, tell your, you know, tag us, do all the social media things. Hit up our Linktree where you can go to our website, our Patreon, all those things, buy some merch. If you would like to get in touch with us, you can leave us a DM over there on Instagram, or if it's more long form, you can hit us up at thatwouldberadpod@gmail.com, or even better, head over to www.thatwouldberadpodcast.com where it's sort of a one-stop shop. You can kind of do anything and everything you want to do with the show, like find a podcatcher. My personal favorite, leave your own personal sort of voice memo to us, or you can tell us your own weird cryptid story, or maybe you have a ghost story or some sort of paranormal experience. We would love to hear it, and we'd love to, you know, feature it on an upcoming show. Actually, I think we may have a new one coming in by our good buddy Matt Mann over in Australia soon, so I'm looking forward to that. Yeah, if this is not enough and you want more rambling from the That Would Be Rad family, head on over to our Patreon, The Rabbit Trail. It's just more of what you love, a little loosier, a little goosier, and typically later at night, so you know, we're just kind of going for it. Like I said before, give us a 5-star review anywhere you can. Tell a friend about the show, that weird friend that's into the, you know, this stuff that not all the normies are into, and we really appreciate it. I guess that's it. What do you got, anything else?
I think that's it, man.
So with that being said, we love you, we appreciate you. And as always,
be rad.
That's the way it goes. My favorite song on the radio.
needed some sunshine. You were already dead before you became a ghost. You always said our future would be a parade of flowers, but now all that's left is a single rose. That's the way it goes.
I did hear a lot of bumps on my end last time. I think I was just like so excited to be back that I was just like bumping the table every 5 seconds. Yeah.
I am hearing that chair squeak quite a bit.
Right now?
Mm-hmm. Well, earlier.
Might like, be haunted. I think you might be haunted.
You're haunted? What?
I think you're haunting.
God, I just had the imagery of you, like, yeah, you know, we had this nice setup in the studio, and then instead of just like an office chair, you just have like a full lazy boy like recliner.
I mean, if I'm being honest, dude, I think that's where we're headed.
Yeah,
you know,
same.
I mean, why are we messing? Like, why are we doing anything else? That's how it should be. You should be comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I just want to live my life like a gentleman. Okay. If I want to have a cocktail at 7 a.m, well, then I'll have a cocktail at 7 a.m. If I want a lazy boy,
yeah,
whenever I'm recording a podcast. Mm-hmm. Then I'll just do that.
Agreed. So you're also you're living like a gentleman, but you're also living like someone.
Great slob. Take it away.
Okay.
Or do you want me to? Do you want me to? I forgot. Yeah, I told you that I would kind of. I got this for just a second.
Okay.
Okay.
Shh.